from a small studio behind a cracked facade. This is Here Be Monsters, the 10th season. My name is Jeff Antman, and I've been making this show since 2012. This project, for me, it's been pretty much my whole adulthood and almost all of my professional career. It's hard for me to think just how much I've learned in the process of making this show and how much of a different person I feel like I am now than I was back then. That being said, the core idea of this show remains identical to the day it started. You see, I am a person who is deeply afraid of the unknown. That is my biggest fear. And this show is a project to talk about fear and talk about the unknown and talk about things that are scary and talk about them in a context that feels safe and kind. Now, if you're a new listener, I hope you like the show. A, I hope you like the show. And B, after you listen to this episode, I really hope you take the opportunity to slowly work your way backwards through the Here Be Monsters archive. Again, this is a show that has been around for quite a while now, and so there's a lot in that back archive. There's some episodes that are interviews, some are documentaries, some are research projects, and some are just kind of broadly experimental. And then there's episodes like this one, which is a personal story where I try to catch some little wisps of smoke that have been floating around in my head and then try and like mash them together into a shape and figure out what that shape means. That's what this episode is. That's how all the seasons start. It's kind of the mood setter for the season. So anyways, this season is going to be 10 episodes long, and they're going to come out about once a month or so until we hit 10, you know, and that'll be the season. So whether you're a new listener or whether you're a longtime listener, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad to be back. Thanks for joining me on this 10th season of Here Be Monsters. So I've noticed something strange lately. You see, right now, my day job, and this is why season 10's been so long in the works, but like right now, my day job is editing other people's podcasts. And so I've been doing all of this interview editing, like snipping out the ums and the repeated words. And I think I'm pretty good at that stuff, but it's also incredibly repetitive, like lots of sitting still, just scooting little boxes from one side of the screen to the other. And in these long editing sessions, sometimes I go into this weird trance, like there's one half of my brain that stays hyper-focused on the edit. But then on the other side of my head, it feels like there's like this little itching behind my ear, and it's a mental itch, and I just can't ignore it. And so then my brain just kind of goes into split screen, just flies off into the ether to retrieve some distant memory of a place and time that I've been before. And I can see things from my life playing back at 1x speed. I don't know how to feel about this sensation, and I don't really know if it's normal or not, so I've been writing them down. I've got about 60 so far. Here's a few. I'm walking barefoot on the warm pavement of my grandmother's driveway just after a rainstorm. My neighbor's basement on a snowy day, playing N64, GoldenEye. The floral section of a Safeway I used to shop at. A summer sunset at the liquor store next to the Armory in Providence. I'm back at my grandma's house. I'm 6 years old. And I find an Easter egg under a giant leaf. The notes I'm taking show that there are patterns emerging, some places that come up more often than others. And for whatever reason, there's this one spot that just keeps coming up over and over and over again in my notes. It's the hardware store, the one in Idaho, the one with the linoleum floors and the free popcorn. At first I was surprised, couldn't quite tell why, but now I think I do know. It's the one and only place I've ever won the grand prize. Thank you.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
being just another kid who didn't own a weather vane.
The podcast about the unknown.
The sponsor for this episode is a really special one for me. It's Radiolab. Radiolab is a podcast and radio show that experiments with sound and storytelling, allowing science to fuse with culture and information in this really unique way. The reason that Radiolab is special to me is because it's the first podcast I ever listened to. It was 2009. I remember exactly where I was. I was riding the bus with my coworker, and she told me that she was listening to something amazing, something that just didn't sound like anything she'd ever heard before. And she handed me one of her earbuds, and I put it in my ear, totally expecting it to be music. And it was incredibly musical. But it wasn't music, of course. It was Radiolab. And so we spent the rest of that trip in total silence, just sharing that pair of earbuds and listening to Radiolab. And it was that initial experience that really kind of shaped my brain when it comes to how I think about sound. Radiolab is a show for people who are curious about the world, for people who want to be surprised and moved, like I was that day on the bus. Radiolab is hosted by Lulu Miller and Latif Nasser, and they do experiential investigations that explore the world through people, sound, and stories. And so I hope you subscribe to Radiolab. And thank you, Radiolab, for sponsoring this episode of Here Be Monsters. I grew up in the yellow and green hills of eastern Washington State. We grew a nice garden each year, and we had raspberry bushes. There's a tire swing on the playhouse, owl pellets under the pine trees, a house with a big porch. I spent a lot of time in the basement of that house. It's always cool and quiet down there. The walls are made of natural wood planks with tiny gaps in between, fluorescent light fixtures that hum when you turn them on, and lots of cardboard boxes, and bookshelves full of books, an exercise bike, a dress form, a machete and a leather sheath hangs from a nail on the wall. An upright piano. This one. My mom's Beatles records. My dad's college textbooks. A doll that's the size of a first grader. There were nooks, crannies, crevices down there. Sometimes things got lost. My alarm went off at 6:30 each morning. Being a country kid meant getting screwed over by the bus schedule. Our house was early on the route, so it meant a long, early morning bus ride that looped us around country back roads for nearly an hour before we wound up back in town. I've seen countless winter sunrises through my half-opened eyes. I went to middle school in a building that was made out of concrete and glass. Single story and flat, with a large gymnasium on one end. The bus would show up so early that they'd make us wait outside until the staff got there. And when it was too cold outside, they'd let us into this long foyer by the gymnasium. On those cold mornings, us bus kids would mill around in that foyer, fogging up the windows with our breath. We'd draw hearts and swear words with our fingers on the glass, play tic-tac-toe. Halfway through middle school, I got a CD player with a pair of silver wraparound headphones. And I'd sit by the vending machine, listening to Rammstein, desperately trying to finish my homework, until someone came to unlock the rest of the building. I had a hopeless crush on my classmate ever since the first day of sixth grade. Our homeroom teacher had put us in charge of making the name tags for the rest of the class, and we were in the hallway together, and she told me that she liked math and playing the piano, and I liked those things too. And then I said something that she thought was funny, and when she laughed, it was the first time that my young heart had ever melted. And in that instant, I caught feelings for her in a big way, and I swore it would be a secret that I would take to my grave. I was scared of everything back then, but especially heartbreak. Now, a couple times a year, we'd have school dances, and in the days before each one, an embarrassed-looking school administrator would stop by each homeroom and give us a short speech about puberty, our changing bodies, and why grinding was strictly forbidden at all school functions. I went to some of those dances, nervous, spent a lot of time standing in the corners looking at my friends dancing, wishing these things were easier for me, just hoping to God that she'd notice me. It was always so echoey in that gymnasium. The DJ played Justin Timberlake and Missy Elliott and Destiny's Child, Sum 41, Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees. And to me, I was just always so confused. Like, it felt like everyone else knew what to do except me. I stood back at the bleachers and pretended I didn't feel panicked. And I could see her across the room, making eyes at the smartest guy on the math team. God, he was good at sports too. Someone came up to me and they asked me, they said, "Jeff, why aren't you dancing?" And I repeated a lie. I said, "I would dance if they played some good music at these things." And by good, I meant Rammstein. And needless to say, he did not play a lot of Rammstein. Seven miles to the east, across the border in Idaho, there's a store that sells everything. I used to go there to get new shoes and like the kits for Pinewood Derby cars. They have a community bulletin board in the entryway where people put up flyers for like church potlucks or sell their old lawnmowers or put up pictures of their missing dogs. They have a free popcorn machine in the lobby so you can get free popcorn and eat it while you shop. And so like everything in the store also has like little greasy smudges. Oh, and on the weekend they have free donuts. The back wall was covered in guns, and off to the left was the place where you could buy clothes and Boy Scout merit badges. And on the right side of the store, there were aisles of housewares and tools and camping supplies and paint. I went to this place so many times as a kid that's just kind of burned in my brain. And for a couple years back there, back when I was growing up, the store threw this big party once a year near Christmas time. And they invited everyone in the community to come to the store from the early evening until late at night. And they had pizza and they had a DJ. But most importantly, they had these five absolutely massive clear plastic stockings hanging up in the middle of the store. And they were stuffed with the whole year's best surplus merchandise, all the things that no one wanted to buy. There's just the most random stuff inside of these things. And I don't know, I can't remember exactly what was in these things, of course, but like t-shirts with pictures of dogs on them, or like witty mugs, or I don't know, probably like weather vanes or discontinued twine. These stockings were coveted. They were the grand prizes, and they got raffled off at the end of the night. I went to that party a couple times when I was a kid. The place would be absolutely packed, and I'd squeeze my way in between strangers and people my parents knew, up to the table with the raffle entry pads. And I'd grab a whole pad of them and a pen, and I'd scurry off to a quiet spot in the aisle among the air mattresses and canoe paddles, with a piece of pizza a bag of popcorn, and a red Solo cup of orange soda. I'd scrawl my name and phone number 100 times, leaving grease stains on the paper, but always double-checking for legibility before tearing each one off and putting it in my stack. And when the pad was empty, I'd push my way back through the congregation of partygoers and dump all 100 tickets into the fishbowl, positive that I'd tip the scales in my favor. This wasn't cheating, this was just how the raffle worked. The tickets were free and you could enter as many times as you wanted. I'd grab another pad and return to my spot, and by the time I brought my next 100 entries back, all my previous entries would be absolutely buried. I'd pray to the raffle gods for luck. And each year I'd go home empty-handed, feeling the sting of being just another kid who didn't own a weather vane. Seven miles to the west and several years later, I was sitting in English class, stewing in all my adolescent heart-sickened paralysis when the vice principal walked in unannounced to deliver a now familiar speech about the evils of, and I'm using air quotes here, the evils of freak dancing. The winter formal was just around the corner. I started considering the prospect of possibly finally asking my crush to go with me. Maybe this was my moment for boldness. Maybe this was my moment to finally try. On the bus ride home, I played out 100 different scenarios, half ending in love and half ending in utter humiliation. But those were outcomes I never had to face because, much to my joy when I got home, my parents reminded me that the late night store party was coming up that very same weekend. It was the same date, the same time as the winter dance. Whatever would I do? Follow my heart? Face my fear of rejection? Finally share my feelings with the person that I had been not so secretly in love with for more than a year of my short adolescent life? Or would I sit on a metal shelf for 4 hours filling out raffle tickets for the chance to win some surplus merchandise from a hardware store? That weekend, I posted up in an aisle full of mops with several 100 entry forms and started working. I phased out my surroundings, drank my soda, and just focused on what had to be done in that moment. Work has always felt really natural to me, a lot more natural than dancing. Because the thing that makes me feel most panicky is like trying to be a part of a group that I don't feel I naturally fit in. But if I can just go off into a corner and just focus on like one thing for a really long time, and then bring that one thing back to the group and share that with other people, then that's a model that really works for me. Always has. Over the course of that night, I turned in several batches of raffle tickets, and each time I'd catch these little glimpses down the aisle, and I'd actually see other kids there doing the same exact thing I was. And while we were sitting on the shelves filling out our raffle tickets, most of our classmates were 7 miles to the west in a sweaty gymnasium, figuring out who they were all together as a group. And maybe it's bad to miss things like that. Like maybe that's like a formative experience that everyone is supposed to have. But on the other hand, I do think that we were all figuring out something together too. Late that night, they called my name for the fifth and final stocking. A nice classmate I didn't know very well cheered and clapped for me, and it made me feel happy. Adults I'd never met cheered and clapped for me too. I took my prize from the store employee and I bared my teeth in a smile of external validation and consumerism. I raised the stocking above my head like a baby lion, and I loudly praised the raffle gods. And for just a moment, I temporarily forgot about heart sickness, secret crushes, and the menace of the smartest guy on the math team and lover extraordinaire. I can't remember everything that was in that stocking. I think most of it was probably pretty unremarkable. I do remember a couple things. I remember there was a small toolbox, a space blanket, a couple cheap screwdrivers that I still have and use, and about 40 plastic clamps. But there was one truly amazing thing wedged in that plastic stocking, a blowgun. and a dozen blow darts. Now, if you have never used a blowgun before, let me tell you, it is pretty therapeutic. You load in a single dart, which is like a long needle with a little piece of plastic on the back end of it, and you load that into the gun, which is this like 3 or 2 foot metal tube, and then you put that tube up to your mouth with the dart in it, and you momentarily gain this like new appendage, right? It's like a long proboscis. And then you look down the length of your proboscis, and you just spin around until you see something of interest. And then you blow really hard. And instantly, it's got a dart in it. I mean, these things are made for hunting. I am not a hunter. And also, they only gave me 12 darts. So I never took it outside, not once. This was an indoor blowgun. And for the rest of that year of school, I would go down into the basement with my 12 darts and my blowgun, and I would just them into the unfinished wooden walls for hours. And it was a great form of catharsis for my otherwise nervous self. Anxiety, dart in the wall. Sadness, dart in the wall. Scared of death, dart in the wall. Scared of my crush, dart in the wall. Afraid of dying, dart in the wall. Didn't do my math homework. But every once in a while, something strange would happen, and I would blow a dart, and it would just disappear. And each time this happened, I would freak out. I would absolutely tear apart the basement trying to find it. But no matter what, no matter where I looked, every now and then, one of these darts would disappear, never to be seen again. Eventually, the initial 12 dwindled to 11, dwindled to 10, then down to 9. I never found them, and I hope to God no one else ever does either. After a year or two, the novelty of owning a blowgun wore thin, and the darts got dull, and I just stopped spending so much time in the basement. I started going to the school dances again, but still didn't know what to do with my arms. But one time, a different friend of mine asked me to slow dance, and it was nice. I quit the math team, started drawing more, and when I turned 16, my parents let me use our old gray minivan so that I didn't have to wake up so early to catch the bus. I got interested in photography, and then later, college radio, and then podcast, etc., etc. And then I realize I'm in my mid-30s. I feel very different from who I was as a 14-year-old. But 20 years later, and I can still get a little bit worried that there's some really sharp darts still stuck deep in the carpet of my parents' basement. And so for the sake of my own sanity, here to kind of alleviate that stress, I've developed a theory. And this is a theory that is a wrong theory, but still, it helps me. It has to do with this metaphor, right? You see, blow darts and memories are really similar. They're sharp. They can be painful, dangerous even, but they dull over time. And sometimes you lose them. And sometimes the harder you look, the less likely you are to find them. And that's because of this phenomenon where, on rare occasions, a blow dart will travel with such velocity it can actually like shift matter a little bit, and it can slip between the gaps in your basement walls and burrow out through the dirt and up into the sky, where it catches a ride in the jet stream, and where they can then orbit the globe, sometimes for years on end. And that's why they might find you again, all these years later. Usually when you least suspect it, when you're deeply concentrated on moving little colored boxes from one side of the screen to the other. And that's when they might choose to come down, whiz past your ear, knocking off a tiny little bit of skin and then poking you in the left half of your brain with an ancient memory of squashed popcorn kernels on a linoleum floor. It's just a theory, though. Thank you. Well, my name is Jeff Entman, and I produced this episode of Here Be Monsters. Music came from The Black Spot and Zero Cell. I also used a number of royalty-free loops to make some of the music in this episode. It's from a company called Slate Digital. Thank you, Slate Digital. Now, if you like Here Be Monsters, you can support this show by becoming a patron on Patreon. For just $3 a month, you can help me pay my rent. Also, I post some exclusive things on the Patreon page. That's at patreon.com/HBMpodcast. But also, you can support the show without spending a dime. You can tell people about it. That's the main thing that really helps this show. I want a lot of people to hear it, and not a lot of people know about this show. So if you like the show, tell your friends. Also, there's another way you can support the show that doesn't cost anything because it costs your boss money. If you have a cool boss, have them sponsor an episode for your company, or their company, or a project you're working on, or something else. All the ads on this show come from people who listen. So if you want to tell the Here Be Monsters audience about something you do or something your boss does, fill out the form, hbmpodcast.com/sponsor. You can also follow this show on Twitter and Instagram at @HBMPodcast. And that's all. So thanks for listening. More episodes soon.
Here. Be. Monsters.